I can take you there then, said Center. That night the strangers slept, and that night Lee Center sent a message to Neo Trantor. Chapter 24. Convert. The thin life of Trantor trickled to nothing when they entered among the wide-spaced buildings of the university grounds. There was a solemn and lonely silence over it. The strangers of the Foundation knew nothing of the swirling days and nights of the bloody sack that had left the university untouched. They knew nothing of the time after the collapse of the imperial power, when the students, with their borrowed weapons and their pale-faced, inexperienced bravery, formed a protective volunteer army to protect the central shrine of the science of the galaxy. They knew nothing of the 7 days' fight and the armistice that kept the university free, when even the imperial palace clanged with the boots of Gilmer and his soldiers during the short interval of their rule. Those of the Foundation, approaching for the first time, realized only that in a world of transition from a gutted old to a strenuous new, this area was a quiet, graceful museum piece of ancient greatness. They were intruders, in a sense. The brooding emptiness rejected them. The academic atmosphere seemed still to live and to stir angrily at the disturbance. The library was a deceptively small building which broadened out vastly underground into a mammoth volume of silence and reverie. Ebling Miz paused before the elaborate murals of the reception room. He whispered, one had to whisper here, I think we passed the catalog rooms back away. I'll stop there. His forehead was flushed, his hand trembling. I mustn't be disturbed, Toran. Will you bring my meals down to me? Anything you say. We'll do all we can to help. Do you want us to work under you? No, I must be alone. You think you will get what you want? And Ebling Miz replied with a soft certainty, I know I will. Toran and Beta came closer to setting up housekeeping in normal fashion than at any time in their year of married life. It was a strange sort of housekeeping. They lived in the middle of grandeur with an inappropriate simplicity. Their food was drawn largely from Lee Center's farm, and was paid for in the little atomic gadgets that may be found on any trader's ship. Magnifico taught himself how to use the projectors in the library reading room, and sat over adventure novels and romances, to the point where he was almost as forgetful of meals and sleep as was Ebling Miz. Ebling himself was completely buried. He had insisted on a hammock being slung up for him in the psychology reference room. His face grew thin and white. His vigor of speech was lost, and his favorite curses had died a mild death. There were times when the recognition of either Toran or Beta seemed a struggle. He was more himself with Magnifico, who brought him his meals, and often sat watching him for hours at a time, with a queer, fascinated absorption, as the aging psychologist transcribed endless equations, cross-referred to endless book films, scurried endlessly about in a wild mental effort towards an end he alone saw. Toran came upon her in the darkened room and said sharply, Beta. Beta started guiltily. Yes, you want me, Tori? Sure I want you. What in space are you sitting there for? You've been acting all wrong since we got to Trantor. What's the matter with you? Oh, Tori, stop, she said wearily. And, oh, Tori, stop, he mimicked impatiently. Then with sudden softness, Won't you tell me what's wrong, Bay? Something's bothering you. No, nothing is, Tori. If you keep on just nagging and nagging, you'll have me mad. I'm just thinking. Thinking about what? About nothing. Well, about the mule and Haven and the Foundation and everything. About Ebling Miz and whether he'll find anything about the second Foundation and whether it'll help us when he does find it and a million other things. Are you satisfied? Her voice was agitated. If you're just brooding, do you mind stopping? It isn't pleasant, and it doesn't help the situation. Beta got to her feet and smiled weakly. All right, I'm happy. See, I'm smiling and jolly. Magnifico's voice was an agitated cry outside. My lady! What is it? Come... Beta's voice choked off sharply when the opening door framed the large, hard-faced... Pritcher! Cried Toran. Beta gasped. Captain, how did you find us? Han Pritcher stepped inside. His voice was clear and level, and utterly dead of feeling. My rank is colonel now, under the mule. Under the mule? Toran's voice trailed off, They formed a tableau there, the three. Magnifico stared wildly and shrank behind Toran. Nobody stopped to notice him. Beta said, her hands trembling in each other's tight grasp, "You are arresting us? You have really gone over to them?" The colonel replied quickly, "I have not come to arrest you. My instructions make no mention of you. With regard to you, I am free, and I choose to exercise our old friendship, if you will let me." Toran's face was a twisted suppression of fury. "How did you find us? You were in the Felian ship then. You followed us?" The wooden lack of expression on Pritchard's face might have flickered in embarrassment. "I was on the Felian ship. I met you in the first place, well, by chance." "It is a chance that is mathematically impossible." "No, simply rather improbable, so my statement will have to stand. In any case, you admitted to the Felian, there is of course no such nation as Felia actually, that you were heading for the Trantor sector, and since the mule already has his contacts upon Neo-Trantor, it was easy to have you detained there. Unfortunately, you got away before I arrived, but not long before. I had time to have the farms on Trantor ordered to report your arrival. It was done, and I am here. May I sit down? I come in friendliness, believe me." He sat. Toran bent his head and thought futilely. With a numbed lack of emotion, Beta prepared tea. Toran looked up harshly. "Well, what are you waiting for, Colonel? What's your friendship? If it's not arrest, what is it then? Protective custody? Call in your men and give your orders." Patiently, Pritchard shook his head. "No, Toran. I come of my own will to speak to you, to persuade you of the uselessness of what you are doing. If I fail, I shall leave. That is all." "That is all. Well, then peddle your propaganda, give us your speech, and leave. I don't want any tea, Beta." Pritchard accepted a cup, with a grave word of thanks. He looked at Toran with a clear strength as he sipped lightly. Then he said, "The mule is a mutant. He cannot be beaten in the very nature of the mutation." "Why? What is the mutation?" asked Toran with sour humor. "I suppose you'll tell us now, huh?" "Yes, I will. Your knowledge won't hurt him. You see, he is capable of adjusting the emotional balance of human beings. Sounds like a little trick, but it's quite unbeatable." Beta broke in. "The emotional balance?" She frowned. "Won't you explain that? I don't quite understand." "I mean that it is an easy matter for him to instill into a capable general, say, the emotion of utter loyalty to the mule and complete belief in the mule's victory. His generals are emotionally controlled. They cannot betray him. They cannot weaken. And the control is permanent. His most capable enemies become his most faithful subordinates. The warlord of Kalgan surrenders his planet and becomes his viceroy for the Foundation. And you," added Beta bitterly, "betray your cause and become the mule's envoy to Trantor." "I see. I haven't finished. The mule's gift works in reverse even more effectively. Despair is an emotion. At the crucial moment, key men on the Foundation, key men on Haven, despaired. Their worlds fell without too much struggle." "Do you mean to say," demanded Beta tensely, "that the feeling I had in the time vault was the mule juggling my emotional control?" "Mine too. Everyone's. How was it on Haven towards the end?" Beta turned away. Colonel Pritchard continued earnestly, "As it works for worlds, so it works for individuals. Can you fight a force which can make you surrender willingly when it so desires? Can make you a faithful servant when it so desires?" Toran said slowly, "How do I know this is the truth? Can you explain the fall of the Foundation and of Haven otherwise? Can you explain my conversion otherwise? Think, man. What have you or I or the whole galaxy accomplished against the mule in all this time? What one little thing?" Toran felt the challenge. "By the galaxy I can." With a sudden touch of fierce satisfaction, he shouted, "Your wonderful mule had contacts with Neo-Trantor, you say, that were to have detained us, huh? Those contacts are dead, or worse. We killed the Crown Prince and left the other a whimpering idiot. The mule did not stop us there, and so much has been undone." "Why, no, not at all. Those weren't our men. The Crown Prince was a wine-soaked mediocrity. The other man, Commerson, is phenomenally stupid. He was a power on his world, but that didn't prevent him from being vicious, evil, and completely incompetent. We had nothing really to do with them. They were, in a sense, merely feints. It was they who detained us, or tried. Again, no. Commison had a personal slave, a man called Inchney. Detention was his policy. He is old, but will serve our temporary purpose. You would not have killed him, you see. Beta whirled on him. She had not touched her own tea. But by your very statement, your own emotions have been tampered with. You've got faith and belief in the mule, an unnatural, a diseased faith in the mule. Of what value are your opinions? You've lost all power of objective thought. You are wrong. Slowly the colonel shook his head. Only my emotions are fixed. My reason is as it always was. It may be influenced in a certain direction by my conditioned emotions, but it is not forced. And there are some things I can see more clearly now that I am freed of my earlier emotional trend. I can see that the mule's program is an intelligent and worthy one. In the time since I have been converted, I have followed his career from its start 7 years ago. With his mutant mental power, he began by winning over a condottieri and his band. With that, and his power, he won a planet. With that, and his power, he extended his grip until he could tackle the warlord of Kalgan. Each step followed the other logically. With Kalgan in his pocket, he had a first-class fleet, and with that, and his power, he could attack the Foundation. The Foundation is the key. It is the greatest area of industrial concentration in the galaxy. And now that the atomic techniques of the Foundation are in his hands, he is the actual master of the galaxy. With those techniques, and his power, he can force the remnants of the Empire to acknowledge his rule, and eventually, with the death of the old Emperor, who is mad and not long for this world, to crown him emperor. He will then have the name as well as the fact. With that, and his power, where is the world in the galaxy that can oppose him? In these last 7 years, he has established a new empire. In 7 years, in other words, he will have accomplished what all Selden psychohistory could not have done in less than an additional 700. The galaxy will have peace and order at last. And you could not stop it, any more than you could stop a planet's rush with your shoulders. A long silence followed Pritchard's speech. What remained of his tea had grown cold. He emptied his cup, filled it again, and drained it slowly. Toran bit viciously at a thumbnail. Beta's face was cold and distant and white. Then Beta said with a thin voice, "We are not convinced. If the mule wishes us to be, let him come here and condition us himself. You fought him until the last moment of your conversion, I imagine, didn't you?"
"I did," said Colonel Pritchard solemnly.
"Then allow us the same privilege."
Colonel Pritchard arose. With a crisp air of finality, he said, "Then I leave. As I said earlier, my mission at present concerns you in no way. Therefore, I don't think it will be necessary to report your presence here. That is not too great a kindness. If the mule wishes you stopped, he no doubt has other men assigned to the job, and you will be stopped. But for what it is worth, I shall not contribute more than my requirement."
"Thank you," said Beta faintly. "As for Magnifico, where is he?"
"Come out, Magnifico, I won't hurt you."
"What about him?" demanded Beta with sudden animation.
"Nothing. My instructions make no mention of him either. I have heard that he is searched for, but the mule will find him when the time suits him. I shall say nothing. Will you shake hands?"
Beta shook her head. Toran glared his frustrated contempt. There was the slightest lowering of the colonel's iron shoulders. He strode to the door, turned, and said, "One last thing. Don't think I am not aware of the source of your stubbornness. It is known that you search for the Second Foundation. The mule, in his time, will take measures. Nothing will help you. But I knew you in other times. Perhaps there is something in my conscience that urged me to this. At any rate, I tried to help you and remove you from the final danger before it was too late. Goodbye." He saluted sharply and was gone. Beta turned to a silent Toran and whispered, "They even know about the Second Foundation." In the recesses of the library, Ebling Miz, unaware of all, crouched under the one spark of light amid the murky spaces, and mumbled triumphantly to himself.
Chapter 25, Death of a Psychologist. After that, there were only 2 weeks left to the life of Ebling Miz. And in those 2 weeks, Beta was with him three times. The first time was on the night after the evening upon which they saw Colonel Pritcher. The second was 1 week later. And the third was again a week later, on the last day, the day Miz died. First, there was the night of Colonel Pritcher's evening, the first hour of which was spent by a stricken pair in a brooding, unmerry merry-go-round. Beta said, "Torrey, let's tell Ebling." Toran said dully, "Think he can help? We're only two. We've got to take some of the weight off. Maybe he can help." Toran said, "He's changed. He's lost weight. He's a little feathery, a little woolly." His fingers groped in air, metaphorically. "Sometimes I don't think he'll help us much, ever. Sometimes I don't think anything will help." "Don't!" Beta's voice caught and escaped a break. "Torrey, don't! When you say that, I think the mule's getting us. Let's tell Ebling, Torrey, now!" Ebling Miz raised his head from the long desk and bleared at them as they approached. His thinning hair was scuffed up. His lips made sleepy smacking sounds. "Huh?" he said. "Someone want me?" Beta bent to her knees. "Did we wake you? Shall we leave?" "Leave? Who is it, Beta?" "No, no, stay. Aren't there chairs? I saw them." His finger pointed vaguely. Toran pushed two ahead of him. Beta sat down and took one of the psychologist's flaccid hands in hers. "May we talk to you, Doctor?" She rarely used the title. "Is something wrong?" A little sparkle returned to his abstracted eyes. His sagging cheeks regained a touch of color. "Is something wrong?" Beta said. "Captain Pritcher has been here. Let me talk, Torrey. You remember Captain Pritcher, Doctor?" "Yes, yes." His fingers pinched his lips and released them. "Tall man. Democrat." "Yes, he. He's discovered the mule's mutation. He was here, Doctor, and told us." "But that is nothing new. The mule's mutation is straightened out." In honest astonishment. "Haven't I told you? Have I forgotten to tell you?" "Forgotten to tell us what?" put in Toran quickly. "About the mule's mutation, of course. He tampers with emotions, emotional control. Haven't I told you? Now what made me forget?" Slowly he sucked in his under lip and considered. Then slowly, life crept into his voice, and his eyelids lifted wide, as though his sluggish brain had slid onto a well-greased single track. He spoke in a dream, looking between the two listeners rather than at them. "It is really so simple. It requires no specialized knowledge. In the mathematics of psychohistory, of course, it works out promptly. In a third-level equation involving no more... Never mind that. It can be put into ordinary words, roughly, and have it make sense, which isn't usual with psychohistorical phenomena. Ask yourselves, what can upset Harry Seldon's careful scheme of history, huh?" He peered from one to the other with a mild, questioning anxiety. "What were Seldon's original assumptions? First, that there would be no fundamental change in human society over the next 1,000 years. For instance, suppose there were a major change in the galaxy's technology, such as finding a new principle for the utilization of energy, or perfecting the study of electronic neurobiology. Social changes would render Seldon's original equations obsolete. But that hasn't happened, has it now? Or suppose that a new weapon were to be invented by forces outside the Foundation, capable of withstanding all the Foundation's armaments. That might cause a ruinous deviation, though less certainly. But even that hasn't happened. The mule's atomic field depressor was a clumsy weapon and could be countered, but that was the only novelty he presented, poor as it was. But there was a second assumption, a more subtle one. Seldon assumed that human reaction to stimuli would remain constant. Granted that the first assumption held true, then the second must have broken down. Some factor must be twisting and distorting the emotional responses of human beings, or Seldon couldn't have failed, and the Foundation couldn't have fallen. And what factor but the mule? Am I right? Is there a flaw in the reasoning? Beta's plump hand patted his gently. No flaw, Ebling. Miz was joyful, like a child. This and more come so easily. I tell you, I sometimes wonder what is going on inside me.
I seem to recall the time when so much was a mystery to me, and now things are so clear. Problems are absent. I come across what might be one, and somehow inside me I see and understand. And my guesses, my theories, seem always to be borne out. There's a drive in me, always onward, so that I can't stop. I don't want to eat or sleep, but always go on, and on, and on. His voice was a whisper. His wasted, blue-veined hand rested tremblingly upon his forehead. There was a frenzy in his eyes that faded and went out. Then he said more quietly, "Then I never told you about the mule's mutant powers, did I? But then, did you say you knew about it?" "It was Captain Pritcher, Ebling," said Beta. "Remember?" "He told you?" There was a tinge of outrage in his tone. "But how did he find out?" "He's been conditioned by the mule. He's a colonel now, a mule's man. He came to advise us to surrender to the mule. And he told us what you told us." "Then the mule knows you're here. I must hurry. Where's Magnifico? Isn't he with you?"
"Magnifico's sleeping," said Toran impatiently. "It's past midnight, you know."
"It is? Then was I sleeping when you came in?"
"You were," said Beta decisively.
"And you're not going back to work, either. You're getting into bed. Come on, Tori, help me. And you stop pushing at me, Ebling, because it's just your luck I don't shove you under a shower first. Pull off his shoes, Tori, and tomorrow you come down here and drag him out into the open air before he fades completely away. Look at you, Ebling. You'll be growing cobwebs. Are you hungry?" Ebling Miz shook his head and looked up from his cot in a peevish confusion.
I want you to send Magnifico down here tomorrow," he muttered.
Beta tucked the sheet around his neck.
"You'll have me down tomorrow with washed clothes. You're going to take a good bath and then get out and visit the farm and feel a little sun on you."
"I won't do it," said Miz weakly. "You hear me? I'm too busy."
His sparse hair spread out on the pillow like a silver fringe about his head. His voice was a confidential whisper.
"You want that second foundation, don't you?"
Doran turned quickly and squatted down on the cot beside him.
"What about the second foundation, Ebling?"
The psychologist freed an arm from beneath the sheet, and his tired fingers clutched at Turan's sleeve. "The foundations were established at a great psychological convention presided over by Harry Seldon. Turan, I have located the published minutes of that convention. 25 fat films. I have already looked through various summaries."
"Well?"
"Well, do you know that it is very easy to find from them the exact location of the first foundation, if you know anything at all about psychohistory? It is frequently referred to, when you understand the equations. But, Toran, nobody mentions the second foundation. There has been no reference to it anywhere."
Toran's eyebrows pulled into a frown.
"Then it doesn't exist?"
"Of course it exists," cried Miz angrily. "Who said it didn't? But there's less talk of it. Its significance and all about it are better hidden, better obscured. Don't you see? It's the more important of the two. It's the critical one, the one that counts. And I've got the minutes of the Seldon Convention. The mule hasn't won yet."
Quietly, Beta turned the lights down. "Go to sleep." Without speaking, Toran and Beta made their way up to their own quarters. The next day, Ebling Miz bathed and dressed himself, saw the sun of Trantor and felt the wind of Trantor for the last time. At the end of the day, he was once again submerged in the gigantic recesses of the library, and never emerged thereafter. In the week that followed, life settled again into its groove. The sun of Neo-Trantor was a calm, bright star in Trantor's night sky. The farm was busy with its spring planting. The university grounds were silent in their desertion. The galaxy seemed empty. The mule might never have existed. Beta was thinking that as she watched Toran light his cigar carefully and look up at the sections of blue sky visible between the swarming metal spires that encircled the horizon. "It's a nice day," he said.
"Yes, it is. Have you everything mentioned on that list, Tori?"
"Sure. Half-pound butter, dozen eggs, string beans. Got it all down here, Bay. I'll have it right."
"Good. And make sure the vegetables are of the last harvest and not museum relics. Did you see Magnifico anywhere, by the way?"
"Not since breakfast. Guess he's down with Ebling, watching a book film."
"All right. Don't waste any time, because I'll need the eggs for dinner."
Toran left with a backward smile and a wave of the hand. Beta turned away as Toran slid out of sight among the maze of metal. She hesitated before the kitchen door, about-faced slowly, and entered the colonnade leading to the elevator that burrowed down into the recesses. Ebling Miz was there, head bent down over the eyepiece of the projector, motionless, a frozen, questing body. Near him sat Magnifico, screwed up into a chair, eyes sharp and watching, a bundle of slatty limbs with a nose emphasizing his scrawny face. Beta said softly, "Magnifico?" Magnifico scrambled to his feet. His voice was an eager whisper. "My lady!" "Magnifico," Beta said. "Toran has left for the farm and won't be back for a while. Would you be a good boy and go out after him with a message that I'll write for you?" "Gladly, my lady. My small services are but too eagerly yours for the tiny uses you can put them to." She was alone with Ebling Miz, who had not moved. Firmly she placed her hand upon his shoulder. "Ebling?" The psychologist started with a peevish cry. "What is it?" He wrinkled his eyes. Is it you, Beta? Where's Magnifico?" "I sent him away. I want to be alone with you for a while." She enunciated her words with exaggerated distinctness. "I want to talk to you, Ebling." The psychologist made a move to return to his projector, but her hand on his shoulder was firm. She felt the bone under the sleeve clearly. The flesh seemed to have fairly melted away since their arrival on Trantor. His face was thin, yellowish, and bore a half-weak stubble. His shoulders were visibly stooped, even in a sitting position. Beta said, "Magnifico isn't bothering you, is he, Ebling? He seems to be down here night and day." "No, no, no, not at all. Well, I don't mind him. He's silent and never disturbs me. Sometimes he carries the films back and forth for me. Seems to know what I want without my speaking. Just let him be." "Very well. But, Ebling, doesn't he make you wonder? Do you hear me, Ebling? Doesn't he make you wonder?" She jerked a chair close to his and stared at him as though to pull the answer out of his eyes. Ebling Miz shook his head. "No. What do you mean?" "I mean that Colonel Pritcher and you both say the mule can condition the emotions of human beings. But are you sure of it? Isn't Magnifico himself a flaw in the theory?" There was silence. Beta repressed a strong desire to shake the psychologist. "What's wrong with you, Ebling? Magnifico was the mule's clown. Why wasn't he conditioned to love and faith? Why should he, of all those in contact with the mule, hate him so?"
But
he was conditioned."
"Certainly, Bay."
He seemed to gather certainty as he spoke.
"Do you suppose that the mule treats his clown the way he treats his generals? He needs faith and loyalty in the latter, but in his clown he only needs fear. Didn't you ever notice that Magnifico's continual state of panic is pathological in nature? Do you suppose it is natural for a human being to be as frightened as that all the time? Fear to such an extent becomes comic. It was probably comic to the mule. And helpful, too, since it obscured what help we might have gotten earlier from Magnifico."
Beta said, "You mean Magnifico's information about the mule was false?"
"It was misleading. It was colored by pathological fear. The mule is not the physical giant Magnifico thinks. He is more probably an ordinary man outside his mental powers. But if it amused him to appear a superman to poor Magnifico..." The psychologist shrugged. "In any case, Magnifico's information is no longer of importance."
"What is, then?"
But Miz shook himself loose and returned to his projector.
"What is, then?" she repeated. "The second foundation?"
The psychologist's eyes jerked towards her.
"Have I told you anything about that? I don't remember telling you anything. I'm not ready yet. What have I told you?"
"Nothing," said Beta intensely.
"Oh, Galaxy, you've told me nothing, but I wish you would because I'm deathly tired. When will it be over?"
Ebling Miz peered at her, vaguely rueful.
"Well, now, my dear, I did not mean to hurt you. I forget sometimes who my friends are."
This book is concluded on the other side of this cassette.